So we are holding on Pei Dalet Amud Aleph, just about the middle of the Amud by the two dots.
Okay.
The Mishnah had said Shchamtis v'nimtis levonim cholo, that if the deal was, we talked the first part of the beginning of the second part of the Mishnah, we talked about a case where you expected to get chitim yofa, it's good quality wheat, and instead you got roi, so vice versa. We talked about that, and then we said that only the one who got the wrong thing is able to back out of the deal. The one who
is there any case where the guy who did the right thing can cancel itself?
That's what we're talking about. For example, in this case, let's say, for example, in this case, he was supposed to get Roy's. Instead, he got Yoffers, which means, in other words, the merchant by mistake gave him the Yoffers instead of the Roy's. The merchant now has the ability to back out of the deal. The Lekeach doesn't have the ability because he's not the one who was wrong. He's not the one who was wrong.
The one who loses is the one who can cancel.
But then we continued. So now we're not really focusing on that. We're focusing more on the next part where the Mishnah continued. On the other hand, for example, if the deal was that you're going to receive Shchamtis, which we said was red or brown wheat, and instead you got white wheat or vice versa, and several other cases, then we say either one can back out of the deal because then it was completely a mekach toast. Then neither one got, the recipient didn't get what he expected, the seller didn't give what he expected.
What's the chiddush?
But that's the point. We have to distinguish between where is a subjective thing like Yoffers versus Roy, whereas we said at the end of the Gemara yesterday, it might just be that really the guy is only claiming it's Roy because he wants a discount or whatever, versus Shchamtis versus Levana, where it's an objective difference. Okay. So, Omer of Papa. So the Papa says, here's a side point that we get from this description of red wheat as Shchamtis. Midikotani Levana. Since the Mishnah is distinguishing between white wheat and Shchamtis wheat, what does Shchamtis mean? Now, it can't mean black. The Rashbam points out you only have there's red wheat and there's white wheat. They don't really come in any other colors. So therefore, and since we're calling the red Shchamtis, which is Maloshen Chama, it comes from the word Chama, which means the sun, Shmamina Hai Shimsha Sumakti. That goes to show, therefore, that the sun is really red.
What?
Yeah. Let's learn through the Gemara first.
Because the wheat is red?
We're calling red wheat Shchamtis, meaning it's sun-colored, implies that the sun itself must be red. Teda, and in fact, you can prove that it is truly red, because after all, you see that the sun looks red in the morning and in the evening. In other words, that's when you see its true color. Now,
hold on.
Let's learn through the Gemara, and then we'll talk about it. Tosfos, by the way, points out. So, what's the relevance? So who cares whether the sun is red or what color it is? Tosfos says one thing that it would be relevant for. Imagine somebody makes a neder. I'm not going to have hanah from any red things. That would mean now he's not allowed to have hanah from sunlight. But now we're saying that the sun is red. The Iyun Yaakov and Ein Yaakov points out another interesting thing.
The moon. That's
not. Yeah, because there's heat. Well, maybe that's less direct.
Go to your red.
But yeah, okay. Yeah. if you make a nether from red, yeah, that's true, I guess. The Iyun Yaakov, and Ein Yaakov points out another interesting thing. We know you're not allowed to make an image or picture of the sun and moon and other heavenly bodies. That would imply what is considered to be an image of the sun for that purpose wouldn't just be a circle, it would have to be a red circle.
Even for scientific purposes, you're not allowed.
No, if you need lahavin or lahoris, if you need it in order to learn, that's different. So that's a discussion we'll have another time. We'll talk about it in another Zardo. We'll talk about it in Rosh Hashanah. When little kids draw, usually they're not necessarily drawing a whole sun. But yeah, the truth is it's not so simple in halacha. In fact, they talk about them in principle. The sun and the moon and whatever are three-dimensional, but we see them in the sky as two-dimensional. So even a two-dimensional picture is not so kosher v'yasha. All right, anyway. Okay. So why is it in the middle of the day? Why don't we see the sun looking red all day? The reason is Nahudin who delay body. It's because our eyes are not strong enough because the sun is blindingly bright. So therefore, it makes it we can't look at it directly. When we look at it and we see it kind of only dimly, we see it looking whitish or yellowish. But the true color of the sun is red. We're saying.
Yes, how come the Gemara didn't see the difference between the color of the sun, whether the sun is very high in the sky or very low in the sky? When it's low in the sky, it becomes reddish.
That's what they're saying. They're saying the true color of the sun in the evening, when you're able to see the sun, you're able to look at it directly, you see it reddish. We'll see. The Gemara is going to say in a minute that it's not so simple. But
no,
wait, why don't we learn through the Gemara? Relax. Okay.
But at 12 o'clock, it doesn't look reddish.
That's the point, the Gemara is saying. Because
here,
at 12, that's the point. Because at 12 o'clock, you can't look directly at it. Your eyes are not strong enough to see its true color because you can't look at it for more than a couple of seconds without it hurting your eyes. But when you look at it and you see, when you're able to look at it for a longer period of time, such as at sunrise and at sunset, then you see it looking reddish.
Even though the puffer shape that NASA has, it's very red in those pictures.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. That,
wow. Okay.
Look, they know something.
Right. Wow. Okay, let's continue.
Wow, that's
the Gemara says Macy. Okay, I have a contradiction to that, though. So you're telling me the basic color of the sun is red, but we learn when it comes to the dinim of tzaras, the pasuk says that a tzaras spot is defined. It's white, umareu omek min ha'or, and it looks deeper than the skin. Now, looks deeper than the skin doesn't mean it's literally deeper. It's actually still flat. It's a flat spot, not an indented one. But it means kamara chama mukam min ha'tzel. It means like the way the sunlight looks deeper than the shade. V'hosam lavanu. And a tzaras spot. When you go outside in the middle of the day and you see things that are shaded and things that are sunny, the sunny things look like they're deeper. So the sunlit area looks like it's deeper than the shaded area. So in the same way, a white spot on skin, especially if it's a little bit skin is a little bit translucent, it looks deeper than the skin, even though it's not really. Even though if you were to feel it, it's actually flat. V'hosam lavanu, and tzaras is white. So what do you mean the sun is red? The answer is kimarecham of aloy kimarecham. The question is, you're telling me that the basic color of the sun is red, but we see from that the basic color of the sun apparently is white, like a tzaras spot.
Because
we compared a tzaras spot to chama amukam and atzel, the sunlight deeper than the shade. The answer is kimarecham of aloy kimarecham. It is in a way like the sunlight, but in a way not. Kimarecham adamukam and atzel. We're comparing it to sunlight in the sense that it looks deeper. But it's not truly like the actual sunlight. Because, as Rav Papa is saying, tzaras, by definition, is white. The true color of the sun, Rav Papa is telling us, is red. Now, though the question is, and wait, I know you've got a bunch of questions, so we'll have to learn through the few lines of the Gemara, and then we'll see. Okay, we're asking on Rav Papa based on that braisa involving tzaras. In other words, the initial assumption was that, not the initial assumption, Rav Papa is telling us the sun is red and that's the true color we see at sunrise and at sunset. The Machshon was asking from Tzaras and assuming therefore that the real color of the sun is white. Well, doesn't the Machshon have to explain why it looks red in the morning and in the evening?
Right.
Mela, Rav Papa has his answer. It really is red all the time. Just in the middle of the day, it's too bright to look at. But the Machshon, who asked the other way around, on the contrary, it seems the sun is white based on that braisa from Tzaras, then how does he explain the red color in the morning and the evening? The answer is, but Safra the Chalfa...
You can put the question in both ways.
No, because Rav Papa has...
The nature is red, but how do you explain it's white at some time?
Rav Papa said that already. He said, because it's too bright to see in the middle of the day. It's too bright to see its true color in the middle of the day. The answer is that Safra the Chalfi Abbe Vardi de Ganeden, very interesting answer. In the morning, the sun looks red. The reason is because it passes by the roses of Ganeden. You have Ganeden is often spoken of as being in the east, Ganeden Bikedem, for example. So therefore, when the sun is in the east, it passes by the roses of Ganeden, and they reflect off it and make it look red. Bapanya the Chalfa Pischa de Gehenim, and in the evening when it's setting in the west, it's passing by the gates of Gehenim, and therefore the fire over there makes it look red.
Not at all.
So
he doesn't agree that the actual sun is red?
So in other words, no. So the Machshon was thinking the sun is white on the basis of the case with Tzaras. And we're telling him that no, we really mean that it really is red. The Machshon thought, in other words, the true color of the sun is white, and the reason why it's red is because of the roses of Gan Eden and the fire of Gehenim. But now Rav Papa is telling us that actually it's not like that. Really, what it is the sun intrinsically is red. And yes, by the way, when you mentioned what NASA takes pictures, I've seen also pictures of what's reddish, orangish, whatever. Yeah. So, yeah. With that said, I mean, there are also you have different. I've seen in different Sfarim where they point out that by analogy, for example, the Gemara sometimes talks about gold as being a reddish color. where you would usually, in our term, you would usually describe gold as yellowish. So,
it's red and green.
Yeah, but still, pure gold is yellowish. So by the same logic, in other words, the Gemara's color terminology is not necessarily the same as ours. The Ikadamri Ibcha, actually some say the other way around, that in the morning the sun is red because, yes, it's in the east, and yes, we're saying that Gan Eden is in the east, but not because of the roses of Gan Eden there, but rather on the contrary, it's in the east, and therefore it reflects across the sky from the west, where we're saying the fires of Gehenna are, and therefore that makes it look red to us. And in the west, vice versa.
But still,
that's the Makshin's assumption, yeah.
The Makshin,
the one who was asking the question, the Gemara, who thought to say that the sun is intrinsically white. Okay, so the Maharal talks about what does this Gemara actually mean. He says that the Gemara is sort of talking in metaphors over here. When we talk about the roses of Gan Eden, the fire of Gehenna, I mean, ultimately, are Gan Eden and Gehenna physical places on earth?
Right.
Mind you, the Ramban says that at least Gan Eden is. The Ramban says, and look, yeah, Adam and Chava lived there originally. The Ramban talks about that, yes, Gan Eden is a physical place on earth. You have the four rivers that the Pasuk mentions coming out from there, etc. I've seen that, I think it was in Ben Yehoyada, he talks about that Gan Eden might be like the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We're going to learn in the next parak, we're going to learn the Mokam Oren Enim Min Amidah, that even though the Oren stood in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and it had physical dimensions, it didn't take up any room, you'd measure the room with and without the Oren, and it would measure the same thing. Gan Eden then can be the same thing, it can be on earth, but not on earth, in that sense, and it was not something discovered in the geography, but nevertheless, Gehenna presumably would be the same kind of thing, anyway. Conventionally you talk about it as being below, but not necessarily. Okay, yeah. From our Gemara, it seems it's in the west. But anyway, Maharal talks about the idea that what the Gemara is trying to say. The Maharal talks about what the Gemara is trying to say is sort of in metaphorical terms. We want to in the morning it's nice and cool. Then during the daytime it gets sometimes oppressively warm, sometimes oppressively hot. Therefore, the Gemara is associating the coolness and the pleasantness of the morning with Gan Eden, and the heat of the day, at the end of the day, if it's still hot from earlier in the day, so when the sun is setting, you still feel the heat of the day, associating that with Gehenna, or vice versa. On the other hand, the morning is the beginning of the hot part of the day. The evening is when it's starting to get nice and cool. So therefore, that's the Ibcha, that could be the other way around.
Interesting that they call the west Gehenna.
Not necessarily, but
the east of the west.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
the west is the east.
Tosfos discusses a little bit. Tosfos discusses a little bit based on other sources that maybe it seems from some places that Gan Eden was more towards the west. It was actually something I think I think they bring something from the Arizal that Gan Eden is in the south. Okay, I don't know. Let's get back to the Gemara. The Mishnah said Yain v'nimtza chaymetz. Here's another case. If the deal was that you were going to buy wine from somebody, and instead he delivered to you vinegar, so he said shnei nicholim masabah, and either one can back out of the deal because again it's a mekatzos. The question is lema maslis in Rebbe hivaloi rabbanon. Do we have to say that our Mishnah is only according to Rebbe and not the rabbanon? Namely, in other words, basically the question is going to be, are wine and vinegar considered to be two different types of things, like red wheat versus white wheat, or are they considered to be basically the same thing? It seems that only Rebbe is the one who holds that they're two things. The Rabbanon would hold that not. Yitanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Yayin v'choymet min echad, wine and vinegar are considered one min, which is relevant, the Rashbam says, for two different dinim. First of all, for the dinim of Truma. If you have wine and you want to set aside some vinegar as truma on behalf of that wine, according to the Chachamim, if you did, maybe you're not supposed to do that with chachila, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute, but at least b'di'evit it would be valid truma. That's one thing. You had some wine, you had some other bottles of vinegar, and you decided to take some of the vinegar and designate it as truma on behalf of the wine, or vice versa. That's one. Then the Rashbam says the other thing is as far as the dinim of moed miksas. Suppose somebody claims you owe me a certain amount of wine and a certain amount of vinegar. Let's say he's mowed down one of them. If we considered wine and vinegar to be two separate things, like wheat and barley, then we would say that's not considered mowed and mixed. He's mowed down all the wheat and denied all the barley. That's not mowed and mixed. But if we say wine and vinegar are basically the same thing, then he's mowed and mixed. So those are the two relevances of saying that wine and vinegar are considered one min. Rebbe and Mishneh min, and Rebbe says they're considered two different minim. Our Mishnah, that seems to say that wine and vinegar are two different things, sounds like it's only according to Rebbe, and that's not the halacha. The answer is Afilu Teimer Rabbanan. No, you could say that our Mishnah works according to the Rabbanan as well.
They should be two different.
That even, in other words, in the cases where the Rabbanan are talking about as far as Truma and as far as Moedim Mix and maybe Moedim Mixas, they would say that wine and vinegar are considered one meal. But for other purposes, in particular, Mecha Chomemka and our Mishnah, they will agree with the Rebbe that they're considered two meals. Afilu Ad Kamli Pligi Rabbanan Alei the Rebbe Elul In Meister Truma. The Rabbanan here are only arguing with Rebbe only when it comes to dinim of Meister and Truma. And the reason for that is b'chid Rab Ila. The reason for that is on the basis of what Rab Ila says. The Amr Rab Ila, minayim tora min ara ala yofesh trumas truma. How taka do we know that if somebody b'dieved gives truma from something bad on behalf of something good? In other words, we're not talking two different minim. Obviously, it doesn't work. But we mean, for example, he has good wheat and bad wheat, or good apples and bad apples, or here wine and vinegar. Let's say we consider them to be one min. How do we know that if you take truma min ara ala yofesh, shatrumas truma, that even though you're not supposed to do it, that is considered valid truma after the fact. It does have the status of truma. Shenema, we know that because the pasuk says, if you take the chelva, the best of it, as truma, then you won't be bearing a sin. You won't have committed an avera. Implying, and the klal hey not the shemei alav. If you give now, but the question is, im ene kodesh nisias chet lama. You have to ask. And so what? And yeah. So, and if you didn't give the chelvoy, if you were to say that it doesn't work, if you were to say that you give minagra ala yofa, it doesn't work, and it's not truma, what kind of aveda would there be? You didn't actually do anything.
Like
you didn't accomplish anything.
That's not really.
Yeah, let's say, for example, it didn't accomplish anything. Why would you think that you get? Why would you think you get an aveda?
Waste your time.
You wasted your time, but that shouldn't be an aveda.
Little Torah.
But okay, yeah. Come on. No, but we're talking about you wouldn't have been learning during that time anyway, for whatever reason. Okay. Thus, we learn that if you do take minadra ala yofa, you may have done an avera because you weren't supposed to do that. Nevertheless, it is valid truma. And we learn that from that passage.
That if you take,
for example, well, here we're talking about vinegar and wine, but the same kind of thing, for example, with, let's say, good wheat and bad wheat or whatever, if you take the bad and give it a truma on behalf of the good, it's not the right thing to do. Nevertheless, b'dieved, it's valid truma. So the Rabbanan are saying, therefore, when it comes to truma, we will consider yayin and chomet to be min echad. We will consider
different prices for that.
What is Bedek HaBayis? You're
cheaper.
Yeah, but Truma has nothing to do with Bedek HaBayis. Truma has nothing whatsoever to do with Bedek HaBayis.
No, he was thinking maybe you're giving the wine for a korban.
No. If you for a korban, we're going to learn in the next parak. Actually, we're going to talk about in connection with some dinim over there about selling wine. We're going to have a sugi over there that talks about what kind of wine is kosher for nesachim, which by the way is relevant to halachos of kiddush as well. We'll get there in 2 weeks or so, Bez Hashem. But yeah. Anyway, no. We'll get there regardless. All in good time. Relax. Okay. So the Chachamim, in other words, are the Rabbanan against the Rebbe, are telling you that when it comes to the dinim of truma, fine, wine and vinegar are considered basically one thing, because after all, they are considered one thing. Avlainian Mecha Chomemker, but when it comes to the dinim of buying and selling, the Kula Alma. Then everybody would agree. After all, some people need wine or they want wine and they don't want vinegar. The ikka de nichalei b'chala v'le nichalei b'chamra, or vice versa. Chala is vinegar. Chala is the Aramaic word for vinegar. Chomet is the Hebrew word. Chomet is the Hebrew word. Chala is the Aramaic word, yeah. Actually, the Ramban, by the way, has a different understanding of the sugya over here. He says that actually what the Gemara is implying is, according to the Rabbanan, it's not even a b'dievetic thing with wine and vinegar. According to the Rabbanan, as against Rebbe, l'chatchila, if you wanted to give vinegar on behalf of wine, it would be fine. In Mecha Chomemka, no, because some people need wine and some people need vinegar. But when it comes to Truma, the Ramban understands our Gemara to be saying the Chachamim would accept it even l'chatchila. It wouldn't be considered min hara ala yofa. They would consider it min hara ala yofa if you have something which objectively is bad versus objectively good. But over here, given that some people prefer wine to vinegar and vice versa, some people sometimes need wine, you can't really say one is worse than the other, per se.
Right. It depends if you have salad in front of you or cheese in front of you.
Yeah. Okay.
What we take it to that cheese.
Wine and cheese. I have a salad. You need vinegar.
Vinegar.
You
also need wine.
Okay. Onward. Okay.
I didn't think that far ahead.
Mishnah says, okay. No, come on. Hamoichet peres lachaver. If somebody sells fruit or produce or whatever to somebody else, and we're talking about that there's a price has already been agreed on. There's a known price. Each afo or whatever is going to sell for X amount.
Is it called yata ashar or is it just we agree?
Doesn't really matter whether yata ashar for our purposes. That's only relevant as far as questions of ribbis. Here we're talking about either they haggle the price and then settle on a price, or there's a known fixed price in the market. Whatever. Yeah. Okay. Moshach v'loy modad. So now at that point, if he does meshicha, and we'll learn in the Gemara where this meshicha takes place. It's not just in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, as we'll see in the guys we've talked about it before. Here, our Gemara is going to be a main place that discusses this whole issue. V'loy modad, but he didn't actually measure out the amount yet. Kona, nevertheless, he's kona because the measuring is just a gili milsa ba'alma to know how much was actually sold.
The Meshicha makes the Kenyan,
in other words.
Why would we have thought differently?
Because you would have thought that, after all. You didn't specify how much you're getting. You didn't specify whether you're taking over here 1 pound of apples or two or ten or whatever. The point is, whatever you end up taking, you've already done a Kenyan on. Modad v'lei moshach loikon. On the other hand, if you measured out, but you didn't do Meshicha yet, then loikona with the caveat that we'll say in the Gemara, it actually depends. It depends, what did you measure it into? Did you measure it into a keli belonging to the moicher or to the lekeach? That makes a difference. Because if you put it into a keli of the lekeach, then conceivably it could be a kinyan as well. We'll see, and we'll talk about all the nuances of that in the Gemara, but yeah. If the lekeach is a smart guy, and he wants to make sure that the sale will go through, and he'll have his goods, and the other guy won't be able to back out of the deal, what he does is socher es makoman. He rents the spot where the thing is located. Now we're talking about over here. We're talking about the Rashbam explains. We're going to learn in the Gemara in a couple of days that we're talking about over here. Let's say you're buying a very large package of something. It's going to be pretty hard to do hagbah on it. It's going to be pretty hard to do hagbah or meshicha on it. Therefore, you may not want to bother. Therefore, socher es makoman. You rent the spot and automatically you coin it beside kinyan chatzis. Halakeach pisht, another case, halakeach pisht on mechaber, right? On the other hand, if somebody buys flax from somebody else, where flax usually comes in smallish bundles, it's not that hard to pick them up. Hareza lekona anchi yitalta lenem mokim lemokim. Then actually, to be kind of them, it's not just good enough to do meshicha, you actually have to pick them up and carry them from one place to another, because they're capable of being picked up. Usually the rule is, we talked about before in the Gemara, and we're going to talk again in our sugya, that usually the type of kinyan is what's appropriate to the thing. Just like we learned before, for example, that you buy a boat, then meshicha where it's possible, or meshicha where it's not possible, is enough. Same thing when you're talking about something fairly lightweight like flax,
right.
then you need hagbah. Then you actually
can't do meshicha on a garto.
Right.
When the rav gives you a garto,
yeah.
I'm doing meshicha.
What about a diamond?
What about a diamond? I mean, you always have to remember there is, aside from all these various methods of pinyanim that we're talking about that Rabban established, there is also sort of like a kol kaminig amadina, but a little bit different. You might call it pinyan situmta. If you have the customary way that people in a certain place or in a certain line of business have of doing business where the deal is irrevocable, that also works in halacha.
In Ireland, they put on their hands and shake hands.
Never heard of that, but okay.
Is it Ireland?
I don't know. But okay. But for example, with diamonds, it's a known thing that in the diamond world, the way that they conclude a deal is they shake hands on it and say mazel bracha. Apparently, even the Goyish diamond dealers do it because Jews are so. Yeah. So then that would be an example of kinyan situmta. Once that was done, even though no hagbah, no meshicha, no kinyan chaser, no nothing was done, the deal is a deal. Yeah.
How do you call that?
It's called kinyan situmta.
How do you spell it?
Samach yud tes vav mem tof aleph. Yeah.
So that means minig
hamadina. Sort of like minig hamadina. Yeah. It's a little bit different than minig hamadina. It's sort of like minig of the socherim in that particular line of business. The tunka literally means like a marking on a barrel. Because they had, for example, when you were selling a barrel of wine, we had this back in Bumatia, I think it was, or maybe earlier in Armistice, I don't remember, but there were places where the minig was, once you had a deal, you sold somebody a barrel of wine, you'd make a marking on the barrel that now belongs to that person, and that was considered a valid drink. Okay. On the other hand, if the flax was attached to the ground, and you pulled some of it out of the ground, even a little bit, kana, then you're kana. We'll discuss that in the Gemara in a couple of days, the nuances of that. Okay.
Even for a whole field?
We'll see in the Gemara. We'll see the deal of it. Okay. So, the Gemara starts out. Amar of Asi, Amar of Yechanan. Now, we said in our Mishnah that if you measured, that's not considered a kinyan. You need Meshicha. However, Rabbi Asi is telling us in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, if you measured out, and we're talking, even the Rashbam says, the Kalev Shal Moicher, we're talking in the Moicher's utensil, so it's not yet, if it was in the Kayak's utensil, then it could be a kinyan, but he was in the Moicher's. But he placed it, Agabe Simta, but he placed it in a Simta, then Kona. Then he's still kona. What is a simta? So a simta, the Rashbam says two possibilities. One is it means a path that belongs to some private people, like a path between gardens or vineyards or whatever that belongs to some individuals. Or the other thing is, we've talked about it before, it means like a side street that sticks out from Rishus HaRabim. So people in Rishus HaRabim, it's meant for pedestrians and animals and whatnot. It's not a place where you're supposed to be putting down anything of yours. But in a simta, we talked about this in Bava Kama, for example, in connection with the dinim of Nezikim, you leave something of yours in Rishus HaRabim, and somebody's animal comes by and then breaks it, they're not chayev. You had no business putting your stuff in Rishus HaRabim. But a simta is like a side street. You people have Rishus to place their things over there.
Right.
In that sense, it's like a chotzer of shuftim. Therefore, even the moicher put down his keli over there, that can be, and you measured into that keli. It's public storage. It's a side street where people transact business, let's say. So then corner.
And the second translation is a corner of the Shusharabim.
It is like a corner that sticks out, yeah, like a corner, like a side street. That's
what they used to do on Wall Street. That's what they used to
do. All right.
They used to, you know, put their crops next to the wall.
Yep, so like on the side over there. Yeah, okay. All right, let's continue. So Rabbi Zera asked Rabbi Asi, you're saying hiniach agabe simta, but you didn't specify. What does that mean? You measured it and you put it in a simta. Are we maybe only talking about where you measured it into your own basket, meaning the lekeach measured it into his own basket,
and then put it in a simta?
Maybe only that is a kinyan. Amalei, so Rav Asi says to him, "Dami, haim erabonan to legamri in shishmaita." This person of the rabbanon, meaning you, is acting like a person who never learned Gemara, who never learned how to learn.
Them dummy?
No, come on.
Rav Asi
is very. You know what? You have a famous Gemara in Ksubas where Rebbe tells his son who's going to succeed him as Nasi, his son Rav Gamliel, Zroik Mora B'Tamidim. Sometimes you got to be bitter and harsh towards the Tamidim, and the Rambam spells it out in Hilchos Talmud Torah. If the Rav sees, if the Rebbe sees that his students are not paying attention and whatever, he's entitled to speak sharply to them and then get them to pay. Yeah, so it's a rebuke.
And they know how to do it.
Yeah, also true. So Rav Asi is telling Rav Zera, asking such a question means like you don't know how to learn a shtickle Gemara. Modah l'sech kubasin memra boy. After all, if you're measuring into your own kupa in a simta, do you need a memra? Do you need me to tell you in the name of? Do you need me to tell you in the name of Rav Yechanan that such a thing is koina? Obviously, Caleb Shalal Keiach is koina. What do you need me to be telling you in the name of Rav Yechanan that would be the case? No, obviously we have to be talking about Caleb Shalmoicher. Okay, the question is kibla minay or like kibla minay. Fine. After Rav Asi says that to Rav Zera, did Rav Zera accept that's what it means? Only that measuring in a simta works even if it's the Kalev Shal Moicher, or did Rav Zera still stick to his own opinion that what Rav Yochanan must have meant is it only works the Kalev Shal Lekeach? Well,
now wouldn't it even work in Rishis Rabbim?
No, not in Rishis Rabbim, in a simta.
No, but in a Rishis Rabbim.
In Rishis Rabbim, no, because he has no permission to put his chafatim over there.
No, but if I put it in your keli in Rishis,
doesn't matter. What's your keli doing in Rishis Rabbim?
I am who you're holding it.
Oh, you mean it's lying down?
Yeah, it's lying, it's sitting on the ground. Yeah.
Oh, so it's not such a dumb question.
No, but
it's sitting down.
It has to
traditionally has to be in the center in the kitty of the lokeach.
That's what we're saying. So Rav Asi is arguing, but obviously that would be no chiddush. You don't need Rav Yechanan to be telling you that. It must mean the Caleb Shomer. So the question is, does Rav Zera accept that, or does he understand it to mean only the Caleb Shomer there? Toshma, come, we'll try to prove. Amar Rav Yanai, Amar Rebbe, that we have Rav Yanai said in the name of Rebbe. Now Rav Yanai is Rav Yechanan's Rebbe. If we can prove what, if we can see what Rav Yanai said and make it, then we would assume Rav Yechanan would hold the same way. Yeah. He says, Chapatana Shutvin, Koinin Zemizeh. In a chotzer that belongs to Shutvin, that belongs to partners, or that Ashbam says the same kind of thing would apply to a simta, because a simta in a sense is like a chasara Shutvin, because everybody has the ability to put their things there. In that sense, everybody is like Shutvin in it.
Why does it say directly?
Because he didn't even because he said chasara Shutvin. Koinin zemizet. The Shutvin are able to make a kinyan one from the other in such a chotzer.
So it seems to be going.
Now my lav agabe karka. Now lechora that means. That lechora that means that we're talking about that you just put it directly on the ground, not even in a keli at all. Just the fact that it's in a chasara shutfin is enough. Well, in that case, that should prove that Rav Asi's version of what Rav Yechanan said is correct. Mother Vinia Hagabi Sitta.
On the ground in the keli, so much more in the keli of the Moichet.
Yes. Let me rephrase it a little bit. I misspoke a little bit before. What Rav Asi was saying, what Rav Asi quoted in the name of Rav Yechanan, Moda Vihinia Hagabi Simta. He measured it using the keli of the Moicher, and then he placed it directly on the Simta, not in any keli. So Rav Asi was saying that works.
First you measure, but then you actually
put it on the Simta itself, on the ground. Yeah, sorry. So whereas Rav Zera is arguing that only maybe if you measure into your basket, into your keli, but not onto the karka. Yeah. So now we're saying, okay, so Rav Yanai seems to be saying that in a chotzer shel shutvin, you can be koina. My lava gabe karka. L'chora, that means that you place it directly on the ground, which would be like what Rav Asi says. The answer is loyal, so kuposa. Not necessarily. You could say that Abasi means that it only works if you put it into your kufa, which is on the ground. Fine, you have the koina, of the lakeah. Yes, you have permission to place your kufa over there, to put your basket over there, because it's a chasara shutvin. You have joint ownership of it. You're allowed to put your kufa down there, therefore you can be koina in it. Doesn't necessarily show that if you put it directly onto the chotzer, even though it's true, the chotzer partly belongs to you, that type of thing should work.
Yeah, but in your keli, it only belongs to you.
That's the point. If you have your keli in a chasara shutvin,
it belongs to both or several people.
A simta is the same as a chasara shutvin.
Right.
Yeah. And because a simta is effectively everybody is like.
But a keli, if you put the thing in a keli, simta still belongs to one person. This keli.
Right. But what was that's the point. Maybe that's all Rav Yanai is saying. If you put it into his keli, which is in the simta, then it works. But maybe not if you put it directly onto the simta. So therefore, we can't prove one way or the other whether Rav Asi's version is correct, and Rav Zera eventually conceded to that, or whether Rav Zera held a different way. And in fact, the Gemara says Hachinami Mistabra. As a matter of fact, yes, it seems logical to say that that's what Rav Yanai meant. That we're talking about, he puts it into a keli, into the keli of the lekeach. Because we have another statement that Rav Yaakov says in the name of Rav Yechanan, Modad v'hinia hagabesim taloy kana. That if you measure and you put it on a sibta, you're not koina. So first we have Rav Asi reporting in the name of Rav Yechanan that you are koina, and then we have Rav Yaakov reporting in the name of Rav Yechanan that not. Kashin Hadadi, wouldn't that be a zero one to the other? Elalav shmamino kan remoide l'sech chupate kan remoide ragabe karka. Evidently, therefore, that would show that one is talking about where there's a keli, one is talking about where there's a keli, the other is talking about where there's a no keli. So Rav Asi, in other words, might have misunderstood. When he heard from Rav Yechanan, Mada v'hinia hagabe simta kana, he mistakenly assumed that that meant, even if there's no keli, whereas now that we have Rav Yaakov's statement also, then we understand that no. Rav Yaakov's statement, where it says loy kana, is talking about where there's no keli, just the simta, and the one that Rav Asi heard in the name of Rav Yechanan, is talking about only when there's a keli. Which
keli we don't know yet.
No, presumably the lekeach keli. There's no reason to think that it should be the moicher's keli. We measured it using the moicher's keli, to place it, it would have to be placed in the lekeach keli.
So
why should it work?
Wrong.
So according to that, it would come out so far that Rav Asi misunderstood it, and Rav Zera's understanding would be correct. Okay.
No.
Good. Shmamina. All right, that proves it. The Gemara accepts that. However, let's continue. Toshma, come, let's bring another proof, another question against. Let's bring another question against Rav Asi on the basis of which we can say that Rav Zeira has an opinion different than Rav Asi. Again, we had that. Not to say it's no. In other words, we could still say we could say maybe Rav Asi made a mistake, maybe he didn't. But Rav Zeira is entitled to his opinion that Rav Asi did not understand Rav Yochanan correctly. We had that one possibility based on what Rav Yaakov says. But on the other hand, maybe not. Maybe Rav Yaakov made a mistake. So now we're going to bring another. Now we're going to try to bring another proof that from our Mishnah, which understanding is the correct one. Our Mishnah continued, Modad v'loy mashach loikana, that if you measured and you didn't do Meshicha, you weren't kainet. My lav v'simta. Presumably, isn't the Mishnah talking about that this took place in a, isn't this talking about that, that it took place in a simta? Now, why don't we say that it's talking about it was measured into his basket? Because if it was measured into his basket, there had to be a Kenyan here no matter what. Whether you look at it Rav Asi's way or Rav Zeira's way or Rav Yaakov's way, once it goes into his basket, which is in a simta, some kind of kinyan is going to be done. So obviously we have to be talking about it was measured out and placed directly in the simta, but we're saying loy moshach, there was no meshicha, and we're also, we know we're talking about a simta because that's where meshicha would be relevant. If a meshicha would have him, you can't do meshicha.
You can, but I mean,
it doesn't mean anything, that's the point, yeah. So we say loy kana. My lav the simta. Wouldn't that be talking about it's in a simta where again Rav Asi had said you placed it directly on the simta without any keli, your kona, in all cases, whereas the Mishnah seems to say loikona. So if you take Rav Yaakov and Rav Zeira's ways of looking at it, fine, we can be distinguishing whether there's a keli, whether there's not, but Rav Asi doesn't hold of any such distinction. Wouldn't the Mishnah be a kasha on him? And therefore again Rav Zeira would be correct in saying, I don't accept Rav Asi's understanding of Rav Yochanan. I propose my own understanding. That we're talking about that you're not koneh directly on the simta. You have to have a Caleb Shalakeach involved over there. The answer is no, Rosh Hashanah. No, you could say that the Mishnah is talking about that it's taking place in Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, if you put your Kaili in your Rosh Hashanah, you're still not koneh with it. That's what, according to Rav Asi, that's what the Mishnah is telling us. The Mishnah is not talking about a case where it's in a simta. Hey, problem is, Yihachi
Eimer. Isn't that obvious?
No, because Yihachi Eimer Reisha, if you're going to understand it that way, if you're going to understand it that way, that it's talking about Rosh Hashanah, Eimer Reisha, look at the first part of the Mishnah, where it said, Moshach v'lo modad kona. We said if you did Meshicha, even though you didn't measure your kona, Meshicha v'Rosh Hashanah mikanya. How is Meshicha accomplishing anything in Rosh Hashanah? It's not a Kenyan. Didn't we have before in the previous parak, we learned this, that Abaya and Rava both said,
right.
In Rosh Hashanah, you can accomplish a Kenyan via Mesira. You hand over the reins or you hand over the rope of the boat or whatever. You hand it over and put it under his control. Or in a Chotah that doesn't belong to either one of them. So a third party Chotah. Meshicha kind of a simta of a chotzer sheishal shnehen. Meshicha can accomplish a kinyan if it's in a simta or if it's in a chotzer that belongs to both of them, because a simta again is like a chotzer that belongs to both of them, right? But not in Rosh Hashanah. Hagbah kind of a chomakim and hagbah picking up the object that is a valid kinyan anywhere.
Even a Rosh Hashanah.
Yes. Yeah. Because you hagbah, you're actually putting it in your own Rosh Hashanah. Like we talked about when we learned that Gemara, we talked about Aaron mentioned the concept, for example, Yodah Shalom Hashuvah like Abba'ah, the Dalad Adalad, a person's own hand, is considered to him like 4x4, so he placed it in his own Rosh Hashanah. The point is, we see that Meshicha does not work in Rosh Hashanah. If you're going to understand the Mishnah as talking in Rosh Hashanah, fine, you can understand the second part according to Rav Asi. How are you going to understand the case where you did Meshicha, where the Mishnah said you accomplished a Kenyan, and we know Meshicha as a Kenyan doesn't work in Rosh Hashanah? The answer is my moshach nami jikatoni mirshos rabim of simta. You're right. Rav Asi would have to understand that the Mishnah is talking about when it says moshach would not mean you did the meshicha within your rishos rabim. It would mean you schlepped it from the rishos rabim into the simta. That would work. Same principle as we said in the previous parak. As far as the boat, where if you were moshach it all the way from rishos rabim into a nearby dock in a simta, then that would work.
The Meshicha started in Rosh
Hashanah and ended in a Simta. Yeah, and it's not like Hilchos Shabbos. You don't need Akira and Hanukkah.
Of course, we're going to accept
Rav Zeder doesn't have to accept that. Rav Zeder can say, I can understand the Mishnah much more straightforwardly.
Right.
The whole thing is talking in a sitta. Modad v'lein moshach v'lein modad is kona, because he did mishicha. Modad v'lein moshach is loy kona, because we're not talking a keli over here. We're talking about you put it directly on the ground of the sitta.
Seems a bit odd that you would start with such a complex case in the resha and then end up with Rav Zeder and Seifa.
No, Rav Zeder would say both cases are talking about, there's no keli involved, so therefore, moshach v'lein modad, you don't need a keli. If you do Mashiach, it doesn't matter whether it's Taylor or not. But we're talking in a simta. Rav Asi, who's constrained to understand the whole thing, is talking in Rosh Abim, is going to have to understand the ratio of the Mishnah is talking about the Mashiach from Rosh Abim into a simta. Okay. Question is, Yehochi Ema Sefer. Still, if you're going to explain it that way, if you're going to say that the Mishnah is talking about things that are taking place in Rosh Abim, what about the last part of the Mishnah that said, we said that if the Lakeach is smart, he'll rent the spot where the thing is located rather than having to do Mashicha or being coordinated with his Kalim or what have you. If it's in Rosh Hashanah, who's he supposed to rent from? Rosh Hashanah is a public domain. There's nobody to rent it from. If it's a simta, then Tosfos says, then fine. You have the simta has a mogri, has a particular mogri opening into it. Fine, he can in principle go over to the people who live in that mogri and rent from them. Then rent the spot, that spot in the simta from them. The Rosh Hashanah, you don't have any.
Bring it from the Rosh
Hashanah. No, and then he doesn't have to. No. Again, if we say the Mishnah is talking about the whole thing took place in a simta, then Socher is Mekoma. He takes the spot where the pile of grain or what have you is and rents it from the people of the local mob.
Okay.
Rosh Hashanah, who are you renting
it
from?
If you rent it, it's not a simta anymore.
No, it doesn't matter. Well, that's the point. He turned that fine. He took that simta and turned it into Rosh Hashanah. It's Rosh Hashanah. Fine. Not a problem. Socher is Mekoma amounts to that. Socher is Mekoma means he's doing it to be a Kenyan chassid. That implies it now becomes his temporarily. He rented it. So that works. But if it's in Rosh Hashanah, then how does such a thing work? Who are you renting from in Rosh Hashanah? Yeah. The answer is Hachi Kama. No, okay, but Rav Asi would understand the Mishnah to be saying like this. The Mishnah that's talking about the Be'im Hoya B'keach would be a separate case, not related to the previous case. We have the first two cases that are talking if it's in Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, Moshach V'lein Modad, you did Meshicha, from Rosh Hashanah into the Simta, you were kind. Madad v'lei moshach. If you measured, but you...
Moshach
v'lei, you did Meshicha. You Meshicha from Rosh Hashanah into the Simta. You were kind. Whatever you end up paying, whatever you end up paying for, whatever. Madad v'lei moshach. On the other hand, Rav Asi would understand that if you measured it out, but you didn't do Meshicha, and it's still in Rosh Hashanah, therefore there's no Kenyan,
right?
Because there's no your Kaili doesn't make a Kenyan, and there was no Meshicha. Now, so far he would understand those two cases that's talking about the transaction started out in Rosh Hashanah. Now he would say the Mishnah is telling us an unrelated case. If the Im, the Shus Bailam, how about a different case? If instead of it being in Rosh Hashanah, if it's in the Rosh Hashanah of the original owner, you can have a case. How can you accomplish it without, given that it's in the resource of the owner, how are you going to be coining this thing? You can't do Mashiach over there either for the same reason. It's not your resource. Therefore, so if you're smart, so Chiras Makom, and then you'd rent the place. And the point is that would work also. Chiras Makom would work just like would work just like lifting it up.
It's almost like a Kinyan
Adam. Not totally, but it's more like Kinyan Chotzer. It's more Kenyan Chotzer. Kenyan Agav would be you're buying land over here, and then you acquire something else with it somewhere else. First of all, here you're renting it. But second of all, here the thing is actually on that spot. You don't need Kenyan Agav. Kenyan Chotzer, basically. The spot is now your Chotzer. Okay, so still according to Rav Asi, therefore, we don't have a problem from our Mishnah. We still can say, like we said before, given... We don't have a contradiction from the Mishnah to Rav Asi. Rav Asi can understand that the first two cases of the Mishnah are talking about Rosh Hashanah. Case number one, you schlepped it from Rosh Hashanah into a Sitta. Case number two, you're standing the whole time in Rosh Hashanah. Therefore, there's no Kenyan. Case number three, you're in the Rosh Hashanah of the person who sold it. Right. Case number three, you're in the Rosh Hashanah of the other guy, and since you don't want to do Hagbah, and Mashiach is not going to work over there, and it's too big to fit into your Keli, let's say, then Tzarecha is Mekoma. Yeah. So Rav Asi wouldn't have a problem with our Mishnah. So you still have the fact that Rav Yaakov had a different version of what Rav Yochanan said before. If we accept that both Rav Asi's and Rav Yaakov's versions are correct, then we have to say that Rav Zera would take sort of a middle ground between them. That he would say that it depends whether there was a Keli involved or not.
Now, Rav and Shmuel the Amritavayu. Now, further on this, Rav and Shmuel both say, Caleb shall Adam Kernelah b'chol makom chutz mirashot rabim. A person's keli can the lekeach keli, that is, can be koina for him anywhere. Not like we were just saying over here now that if it's in the rishus of the moicher, you don't have any way to do. No, it's an unrelated thing.
They lived at the same time.
Rav and Shmuel actually are contemporaries of Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan may have been alive at the time. I don't know. Anyway, so they're saying a separate thing. Just now, we were assuming in the previous discussion that if you're in the rishus of the moicher, if you're in the rishus of the seller, there is no other way to do the kinyan except either you do hagbaha or secher es mekayim. And therefore, if hagbaha is impractical, and if you're smart, you secher es mekayim. That's what we said before. That's how we understood the Mishnah according to Rabbi. Now come in Rav and Shmuel and say you don't need that. A person's keli can be koneh for him b'chol makom chutz mirishus rabim, in any place other than rishus rabim. Meaning, in other words, even in the rishus of the moicher. Well. So actually, the Rashbam says it depends. Is the moicher telling him, you can be koina using your keli in my rishus, or not? Is he just putting into his keli without the moicher saying it? So later on, the Rashbam says, in tomorrow's Gemara on Pei Vav, we're going to talk about that if the moicher doesn't tell him one way or the other, we're going to ask that question, and the Gemara is going to leave it unresolved. So our Gemara, when we're saying over here, means with the consent of the moicher, yes.
Then
explicit consent. That's Rav and Shmuel. But Rav Yochanan, Rav and Shmuel both agree on that. But Rav Yochanan and Rav Shimon Lakish Dami Tabayu. On the other hand, Rav Yochanan and Rav Lakish both say, "I feel a Rosh Hashanah." So the thing would work even in Rosh Hashanah.
Meaning the Mecha would agree.
No, as long as the Lakeach is putting it into his Kevi, the Rav Yochanan and Rav Lakish would hold that's a valid Kinyan, even if that Kevi is standing in Rosh Hashanah. However, a papa says they're not really arguing, even though they use different terminology. One says chutz mirshus rabim, and the other one says afilu mirshus rabim. They're not really arguing. Can mirshus rabim, can be simta, because it depends whether we're talking about an actual mirshus rabim or whether we're talking about a simta. Rav and Shmuel, when they say that chutz mirshus rabim, they mean mirshus rabim in the usual sense, an actual full-fledged mirshus rabim. That kind kalov shalakeach is not kind of it. When Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish say Akhila Rishus Rabim, they don't mean an actual Rishus Rabim. They mean a simta.
True.
They mean a simta, which is Amai Korolo Rishus Rabim. Why do they call it Rishus Rabim? She'en Rishus Yachid. They just mean as opposed to a Rishus Yachid. In their terminology, in other words, anything that's not a Rishus Yachid is called a Rishus Rabim. For our purpose. But that's what they mean.
Anything that's not Rishus Yachid is Rishus.
For this purpose, obviously not for other halachas, not for Shabbos, for example, but for this purpose, if it's not Rishus Yachid, we call it for this purpose Rishus Rabim. So they're
simta is Rishus Rabim.
That is for them that they're considering a simta to be Rishus Rabim. Yes, that's true. Actually, thank you. Yeah, there you have it. For Tumah V'Tahara, when you have the whole dinim of Suffolk Tumah Rishus Yachid versus Rishus Rabim, it depends how many people are there. Yeah, if you have a place where there's regularly people, then yeah, it's a simta regularly has people in it. Yeah.
You never saw this halacha before, Rav Shmuel.
It didn't come up before, but yeah.
Because we never got angry yet.
Yeah.
No,
okay.
We didn't
have occasion to mention it. Okay.
They should have Masechta on Tumah V'Tahara. It would make it easier for us.
Well, the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara for that reason, the Gemara is spread out throughout other Masechtas, but therefore, whenever we've talked about this before, whenever the Gemara has to deal with a Mishnah from Seder Taurus, it always takes the time to explain it and then go through it because there's not going to be another Gemara to do it.
Right, yeah.
Okay, the Gemara says, Hachi Nami Mistabra. As a matter of fact, yes. It seems logical that we have to understand Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish that way, not to literally be saying that you can put your keli down in Rishus Rabim and have it be koina for you. Because Rabbi Bohu said also in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Kalev Shaladim, Koinle Bahomakam, Shiyeshle Rishus Lahanichle. A person's keli is koina for him any place where he has Rishus to put it down. Namely, for example, a Sitta or a Chotta where he has Shutfus. Or even the Rishus of the Moicher, if the Moicher again told him, you have permission to put down your Keli and be Koine over here. Yesh le Rishus Ein, Ein le Rishus Loi. Evidently, we're only talking about a place where he has Rishus, not where he doesn't. Shmamino. That proves it. The Rishus of Rabim, you don't have permission to put down your Keli because there's nobody there to give, there's nobody who's able to give you permission. The Rishus of Rabim belongs to everybody.
And if it's a town, let's say, the Rishus Rabim, for the town control of that Rishus Rabim, and they give you permission.
Oh, who's the they? You'd have to ask.
Then it would be like a simta.
So then I guess it would be like a simta, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, you have, for example, you know what? I mean, you have in Shabbos, for example, you have something about Bein HaMudim. You have a situation over there where you have an area part of Rosh Hashanah where you have a bunch of pillars stuck into the ground that people would use for
the typical Carmelites where they're selling these things and they have it. It's less than three tefachim and it's higher than three tefachim equipment.
Yeah, so I guess it's possible for the Bnei Rosh Hashanah to decide that a certain area of it can be used for something else, like a simto or whatever. But as long as they have it, you don't have permission to put your keli down there. Okay. Toshma, come, let's try to prove on this question of whether you can be of whether you're able to be kona in Rosh Hashanah Rabim or not, or where you're able to be kona using your keli or not. Let's prove it from the following brayta. Arba midas b'mochrim. There are four midas when it comes to sellers. Now, what do we mean by what? So the Rashbam starts by saying we don't mean, for example, that there's four rishuyas, as in you could say there's the rishus harabim, the rishus of the seller, the rishus of the buyer, and the rishus of the one who you gave a pikadon to. The Rashbam says, I mean, after all, a mocher and a person who received a pikadon are basically the same thing for this purpose. So therefore, that wouldn't be really be four rishuyas. So he says what it means is that. So what it means is that you have four different cases. You have a chotzer that you have like this. You have a rishus harabim. You have a chotzer that doesn't belong to either one of them.
What's that?
A chotzer that doesn't belong to either one of them.
A
private chotzer that belongs to somebody else. Yeah. So those two together, rishus harabim and chotzer shein rishus shneim, is one. Number two is number two is when you have so you have like this. Sorry. Besides considering whose reshus it is, you also have to consider that Rashbam says whose midah it is. Who, when we say Abba Midas V'Mochrin, we mean over here what the location, Rosh Hashanah versus Rosh Hashanah or whatever. We also mean whose midah is it? Whose measuring utensil is it that's being used to measure out? Is it that we're talking about it's a measuring cup, for example, that doesn't belong to either one of them, and you're in Rosh Hashanah or a chotzer that doesn't belong to either one of them, then we say that's one kind of thing. Case number two is that you have the midah belongs to one of them, but you're still in Rosh Hashanah or a chotzer that doesn't belong to either one of them. Then you have a reshus of the seller or the nifkad, that's three. And the case of Kabbalah or Schirus, where you receive or where you rent, that's four. That's how the Rashbam explains these words, Abba Midas B'Mochrim, and then he'll explain the Braisa on that basis. Tosfos talks about it differently, that no, we're talking about, for example, are we talking about there's a sarister, a go-between, in between over here, there's the mocher, the lekeach, the nifka. So Tosfos explains it that way. And then there are other Rishonim who do explain that it means literally four Rishuyas, as in Rishus Rabim versus Rishus Yachad versus Nifkad, whatever. And they explain why there would be a bit of a difference between a seller and somebody receiving a pikadon. Okay. Anyway, so I've admitted some Rishonim. Number one, ad shalom ismala midol amocher. In case number one, up until the measuring utensil is filled, it still belongs to the seller. So let's say, for example, you're measuring out wine or oil, let's say, into a container. According to the Rashbam, this first case is talking about where this measuring cup doesn't belong to either one of them. And you're in a place which doesn't belong to either one of them. It's Rosh Hashanah or it's a third-party chaser. So, ad shalom ismala midol amocher. Until the container is filled, then it still belongs to the seller, in the sense that while you're filling it, at that point it's filled, then the seller is the one who has to take the loss. It still belongs to him. Or, for example, if the price goes up, it still belongs to the seller. The buyer is entitled to say, the seller, rather, is entitled to say, you know what, it still belongs to me. I don't want to sell you at the old price. I want to sell you at the new price. Once it was filled up, then it belongs to the buyer.
The keli is completely full.
The keli is completely full because the reason it doesn't belong to either one of them, but the purpose of why did somebody lend it to them was in order to use it to measure, and also afterwards for him to be able to use to store away, to be able now that he bought the wine or the oil, he needs to keep it in that container until he's able to transfer it into a container of his own. So therefore, now that means, by the way, that Ashbam says, according to the Tana of this Braita, and that's why we're bringing this in over here, even though it's temporarily it's your keli, because you borrowed it for that purpose, and again, once it's filled up, it's considered now it becomes your keli temporarily, now it's considered you the lekeach borrowed it, you're in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, doesn't matter, you're still cutting it with it. Not like Rav and Shmuel, and not like Rav Yechon and Rosh Lomesh, which is why we're bringing in this Braita. Later on, the Gemara is going to explain. We'll get to it tomorrow at this rate. But later on, the Gemara is going to explain we're not talking Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. But at the moment, this is what we're thinking about. We're talking Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. That's midah number one. The medvar mamur b'midah she'ena shoshnei. When is this talking about when the measuring container doesn't belong to either one of them? Ablim ha'isa midah shal echad mehen. But if the container belonged to one of them, which the Rashbam said either one, either the lekeach or the moser, then Rishin Kana. Then as you put more and more into it, then you're koine, which would mean that Rashbam says if the measuring cup belongs to the mocher, so even though you already filled it up, it still belongs to the mocher. He would still have the ability to back out, or if it's filled, it's his loss, even after it's full, because it's his keli, because there's no meshicha yet. On the other hand, if the measuring cup belongs to the lekeach, then even before it's full, you pour in 1 gallon, and that gallon now belongs to the lekeach. You pour in a second gallon, now it belongs to him, and so forth, because it's keli. There are other Rishonim who learn differently. There are other Rishonim who learn that echad mehen means specifically it belongs to the lekeach. Okay. When are these cases talking about where it makes a difference who the container belongs to, if it belongs to neither one of them or if it belongs to one or the other of them? That's the difference in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim of a chotzer shein or shneim, or a chotzer that doesn't belong to either one of them. Aval v'shus mocher, this is case number three. If we're in the reshus of the mocher, loikana, then you're not koina, the lokeach, ad shiag bihena, until he either lifts up the keli, agbar can be koina anywhere, oh yeah, she at the end of the reshus, or until he takes it out of the reshus of the mocher. Versus lekeach, what about another case? What if the keli is in the reshus of the lekeach? Kibin shekivul olav mocher, kana lekeach. As soon as the mocher accepts on him, he agrees to sell it for a certain price, immediately the lekeach is koina, because even if he didn't measure it out, because it's in his reshus. So even if it's the mocher's keli that you're using to measure it out, it's in the lekeach's reshus. In his own chater, yeah. What about in another case? What about if you have this grain or oil or whatever it is was deposited for somebody else, was deposited by somebody else for safekeeping? Where the deal is, when you deposit stuff by somebody for safekeeping, that person is being makne you that rishus that your payrus will be over there.
Oh yeah.
So then, therefore, it's considered like the reshus of the mocher. Loikana achi kabel olav ayachi yisus mekayman. Then it only works if the mocher accepts that if the shomer accepts on him that he's going to now transfer this reshus to the lekeach, so that he'll be kona the payrus, or achi yisus mekayman, or unless the lekeach rents the spot.
The shomer gives the spot to
the shomer either gives or rents the spot to the new lekeach.
So he's not responsible.
So that he's not responsible.
No, right. And therefore it's sitting on something that's not the owner.
So now it's not sitting in a place that belongs to the original owner. Now it's sitting in a spot that belongs to the lekeach. Therefore he's kind of. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow with how we're gonna try to make this fit with Rav or Shmuel or Rav Yechon and Rosh Lakish's statement. Yeah.